Hey, we're joined by Skip Lockwood. Skip is a former major league pitcher and had a very interesting career. And he's got a book out. It's called Insight Pitch, My Life as a Major League Closer. Excellent book, excellent story. Skip, how are you?
All right, how are you today? I'm great.
Doing good. Why the book? What was the motivation for the book?
First of all, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. The book comes from some years of people asking me what it was like to play in the major leagues. You know, what do they talk about on the sidelines? What do they talk about in the dugout? What's that catcher saying to that pitcher out on the mound? You know, what I try to do is it's difficult to take to tell somebody about that without taking them with you. So what I try to do is bring your reader into the action. I wanted them to be in uniform with me, to get a grip on the ball itself and have the pitch count in their favor and be facing a batter as live as I could possibly make it. I wanted to tell a baseball story in slow motion, and I wanted to bring the reader out on the field with me.
Well, you definitely get that feeling as you go through the pages. Your career started 1969, at least in the big leagues, but we're going to get to how you signed originally with the old Kansas City A's, a great story. And you pitched for the Pilots, the Brewers, the Angels, the Mets, and finished up with Boston. But 12 years in the big leagues, fans, so you know this. Skip was in 420 games, I'm reading from Baseball Reference now, 1,200 innings pitched, and a whip of 1.3, which in those days was excellent. And you completed games, you saved games and all that. You were known as a very versatile pitcher, and those were the days when you could do that, start and relieve. You don't see that today, but you did it.
I started when I was in the American League with the Milwaukee Brewers and the Angels, and I was okay. I was in the rotation. I don't think I missed a start in the rotation, but I was trying too hard, Marty. I was gritting my teeth. I would have chewed through the bars of the bullpen, I think, in those days. I was really grinding it out. And when I was when I came to the Mets, I became a relief pitcher, and that's so much different. It was such a different. There was something clicked inside of me. I didn't have to try. I didn't have to wait 4 days to pitch again. I was on the hill again the next day. If I had a bad outing, I didn't have to listen to my insides gurgle for 4 days. I got a chance to go back out there. I pitched in a big city, and I just enjoyed it. It was the relief pitcher, especially being a closer, for me was made all the difference in my career. It's where I flourished.
Tell the story about signing with the old Kansas City A's. I love this story with Charlie Finley. This is a good one.
Well, this was before the draft. So the draft came in next year, and there was bird dogs and scouts, and they followed the local school boys at colleges and high schools. And I had a pretty good high school career. I got to play in an all-star game in New York and hit a home run. So the people were following me junior and senior year. I had a pretty good idea that I wanted to sign, but I was just a kid. I was 16 years old, 17 years old, and you don't know your own mind, really. And Pat Friday from the A's came in. It was Charlie Finley's right-hand guy. I think he came from insurance. I don't think he came from baseball. But he flew in and had a dark blue suit, and it was a hot day, and he came in and he offered me $35,000, which is what I had been offered on the phone, and I had been offered in person one other time, $35,000. 1964, that was a lot of money. And I considered it, and then I was kind of a, headstrong young man, so he pushed the contract over with me to sign, and I changed the name of it, and because he had Skip Lockwood on it, and that wasn't my given name. And then he, can you hear me okay, Marty?
Yeah, we hear you great. Go ahead.
Okay, good. I've got a little background noise. And so when the contract got to my end of the table, I took his pen and I put a one in front of 35. And, if I was going to do that again, I'd never tell anybody to do that. Just too headstrong at the time. But he made a call to Charlie Finley, and I got close to that by the time I got everything signed and delivered. and I was very pleased to be on my way to, you know, professional baseball.
Well, I love it. 35,000, you put a one in front of it, and you're pretty good. Very good. I love that story. I've never heard that story from anyone before, so that's a good one. Skip Lockwood is our guest. The book is In Sight Pitch, My Life as a Major League Closer. Skip, you were part of the Pilots in 69 for a short period of time. And so folks know it's the Seattle Pilots, an expansion team way back then with the Kansas City Royals came in. But Matt Leland, you've got a question for Skip. Matt actually had a good point. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Skip. This is Matt Leland back in the KNBR 680 studio. I just wanted to ask, that 69 Pilots team has become a kind of legendary in baseball history, and I wanted to know what your memories are of being on that team. Did you ever see Jim Boughton taking notes or anything, or what was it like being on that squad?
Well, I haven't looked up cuckoo in the dictionary lately, but legendary I think might be a good substitution. You know, that was a team where those players were undrafted players, unprotected players, because that was a new team. And so all the teams protected the players they want, and this was the team of the players they didn't want. So by definition, we were the dirty dozen. I didn't see Jim Boughton taking any notes. And if you think back of what he wrote and what he said, It wasn't much. I mean, he talked about the players by name, which I think was the one thing that they didn't like the most. But he certainly shocked everybody for coming out and telling stories out of church, I tell you that.
You know, it's funny. You grew up in the 60s, and life changed in the 60s, especially reporting and players being more outspoken. In the 50s, we had a writer named Jim Brosnan, who was a relief pitcher for the Cardinals and the Reds at that point, and did a little bit with the Cubs, I think. But he wrote a book, and that was legendary, about life like you just described it. But in the 60s, players talked out a lot more, and someone like Jim Boughton wrote Ball 4, and I'm sure sort of gave you a little bit of the background that you could someday do that.
Well, we started to feel our oats a little bit. I played in the 60s, the 70s, and a little bit in the 80s. And the baseball game changed. And we didn't have any free agency or salary arbitration. We had a contract that was sent to you once a year, and you either signed it or you didn't play. And a lot of times, one time I got to spring training, I had switched from being a third baseman to an infielder. I landed in spring training. I signed the contract. I didn't know what I was, a third baseman or a pitcher. Yeah, so I got to the meeting that they have when they get everybody in uniform, they have a meeting. I didn't know who to jump. They'd come on the infield and go out to the outfield with the pitchers. We started to feel our oats a little bit. Marvin Miller was the captain of our union, and he was staunch in his thinking that we had a contract that had rights to it, and we didn't think we had rights. But he assured us that we did. We had a couple guys that stood up for those rights, and the baseball players today benefit a lot, completely, because of what we did back in the 60s and in the 70s.
Hey, Skip, Adam Copeland here. I'm glad you brought that up about making the switch from you signed as a third baseman and then you made the switch and you started games and you became a reliever and a closer. We've seen several major leaguers do that over the last handful of years. Kenley Jansen, Joe Nathan come to mind. Can you talk about that transition where you were already playing professional baseball as a third baseman and they say, hold on, we want you to be a pitcher instead?
Right. Well, my career was over as a third baseman. I couldn't hit the curveball. So I was swinging at the balls and taking the strikes for one whole year. I had you know, such thick glasses they wouldn't let me play the outfield in the games because they were afraid my eyebrows would set fire. I didn't have anything else to do. Charlie Finley called me on the phone. I thought he was going to release me, and he said, you know, I picked up the phone and it was Charlie. And I for sure thought that conversation was going to end, well, thank you very much, and I'll make sure that the ticket's in your name. I was going home. And what he did is he gave me a second chance. And he had confidence in me, continued to pay me, gave me a uniform, and he wanted to make a pitcher out of me. And I was all for it. I wasn't going anywhere. Sal Bando was in the big leagues playing third base. I wasn't going to beat him out. He was a great player. So, you know, getting a chance to go to the mound, I had thrown some batting practice and I had pitched a little bit, but I had never pitched in a game. I had to learn a windup. I had to learn a curveball. I had to learn which foot you step on a rubber with. You know, the whole thing for me was new. So you have to put everything away and you have to commit to that. You have to say, okay, I'm not third base anymore. I'm going to pitch. And that's a mental, adjustment that you have to make when you make that. It's like going to the knuckleball. If you're a pitcher and you go to a knuckleball, there's no going back. You don't go back and try to throw the fastball again. That's a commitment you make. Once you make that step, you make it.
Boy, great story. Great story. Yeah. The book is filled with stories like that, and played for the New York Mets. And it's a great way to end it, truthfully, because from the third baseman, and you made a whole career, a successful career, as I gave you some of the stats as a pitcher. So it's a story. You got a good story here, and I'm glad to have you on.
Thank you.
Skip, where do we get the book? Is it on the usual outlets?
It is. You can get it on Amazon and order the number. If you Google it or on Amazon, it comes right up.
Yeah, a lot of fun. A lot of fun. You got a foreword by Fergie Jenkins. You got a Tom Seaver quote. I know you saved the big game for him when he won the Cy Young. And there's a lot of good anecdotes in there, and that's what keeps baseball alive. So congratulations. I'm glad you did it.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased with it.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Skip. We'll be in touch. Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that was pretty good.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, we have the Book Tree in Montclair. David up there is an independent bookstore, so I always like to give him a plug. And, you know, I like the independent bookstore. So, David, we'll see you up there. Maybe you can carry Skip's book. But interesting, huh? Matt, that was a very good question you asked about the pilots. Do you remember any of the pilot players, Matt?
Other than Boughton? No, not really.
There was a guy, Gene Brabender. And he was with the Orioles, and he was another one of those pitchers with glasses on. But he was so strong, he used to take a railroad spike and bend it. And that was his thing. You know, he would be, you know, the strongest pitcher in the world.
The strength stuff they used to do back in the day.
That's what they used to do. And then, so that was one that I remember. But Joe Schultz was the manager. I didn't ask him about Joe Schultz. And he would, you know, Raff and I have done some shows with this where, you know, he'd come out to the mound and say, "All right, get him out, and let's go in the clubhouse and pound the Budweiser." You know, that was his pep talk.
Different time.
Yeah, much different time.